This episode of The Tour Life is also brought to you by Optimize Touring. If you're interested in learning how you can bring health and wellness on tour with you, whether it's a small van tour or a huge arena tour, go to optimizetouring.com to learn more. Welcome to The Tour Life podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is a tour director and production manager who has toured with artists such as The Wallflowers, Cage the Elephant, Arctic Monkeys, Walk the Moon, Ex-Ambassadors, Capital Cities, and Gabriel Fluffy Iglesias. He is also the creator and owner of Masters of Maple Drums. In this episode, we discuss growing up with a recording studio in the house, hustling your own drums even when you're not supposed to, Legos, morale on tour, and slowing down even when it's really hard to. You can find him on Instagram at LA Drum Guy. Here is my conversation with Sai Hanif. Sai, how are you? Thank you so much for joining me on the Tour Life podcast.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Janine.
So I'm so excited to hear about some of the things that you are doing. So I am going to ask you about your partnership with Music Cares and Recording Academy, because I saw that on Instagram.
Yeah.
But before we get into all that, can you tell me a little bit about how you got to where you are? And did you always know you wanted to work in the music industry?
Yeah. You know, I grew up in it. My dad was a musician, plays a little bit of everything, taught me how to play drums and guitar and all that good stuff. And he actually scores some Bollywood stuff too. So I grew up with a lot of music in the house, and sometimes he would bring in musicians and they would do shows at like civic centers and all that stuff. So myself and my brothers were like baby roadies. So I remember like my earliest memory of this stuff was like patching a stage up when I was like 6 or 7. He showed me how to set up a PA, and that was kind of it. But I never thought I'd be on the crew side. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I played drums, so I thought I was going to like be in a band and play drums forever. So that was pretty much how I got into it. And then just growing up around it, eventually I started a brand of drums called Masters of Maple, and it kind of all went hand in hand. I mean, when I was out there hustling drums, I became a drum tech, which I didn't even know what that was back then. And, you know, I just thought I was like setting up drums and hanging out. And then, you know, as you kind of learned as you went, you know, I started the company pretty young. I didn't really realize, I'm like, oh, that's like a career. Like people do that for a living, you know. And then eventually I would, yeah, I was kind of a bigger guy. And so as I got older, they were like, hey, you know, you're somewhat responsible. You can handle the money. Like you're the TM now. And I was like, I have no idea what that is. So it was just a lot of like trial by fire and, you know, just going from there. And then eventually I really liked the production side. I mean, I do a little bit of both. Like I'm like a tour director, a tour manager before I production managed, but, and you know, kind of everything in between aside from like lighting, but, essentially I kind of really, found my footing in the production side. I like to build things, and, you know, I really enjoy that aspect of it too. But, you know, I also like interfacing with the artists a lot and, you know, being around. And, you know, I have a pretty strong hotel game, which I'm very proud of. So I like the tour management side too, or the tour directing. So it's kind of the best of both, really.
That's so fun. I always love the story when it's like, oh, my parents like took me around and it just became my life.
Yeah, it's exactly how it happened. I had no idea. And then I think a few years ago, I had a bit of an epiphany. I was like, oh my God, like, I was like born into this. I didn't even know that this was going to happen. You know, I just thought it was like something fun my dad did was, you know, have gigs on the side or, you know, whatever. But it just really was, I got really lucky because, you know, my dad really always wanted me to work hard and like find my own footing. And he was kind of against me getting into the music business in the beginning. Yeah, I think a lot of parents are too. There's a lot of uncertainty and it's a little dog eat dog out there sometimes, you know, especially being young and coming up. And I think everybody listening and a lot of your people that have been on here, some of my friends have been on here, we've experienced that for sure. But, you know, it was just one of those things. Like my dad was like, if you want to do it, you know, go out and go get it and figure out what you want to do and go for it, I guess, you know, good luck. And that was
He's like, it. All right, leave the desk, go figure it out.
Absolutely. No. But, yeah.
So what did you experience as a kid with your dad being involved in music and things like was it a traditional, you know, I mean, it's not a traditional 9-to-5. So how was the whole family structure?
You know, it was cool. Like, I mean, my mom was home. I mean, I had brothers and my sister and we were just kind of like, it was always kind of wild though, you know, because we would have the normal stuff as kids, you know, like being, you know, loud and, you know, crazy. There was always this other layer that we had that was kind of interesting. And then, you know, when you're a kid, you kind of just think like everybody has a house like you do. But then all my friends would come over and be like, you guys have a studio in the house? Like, it was super weird. And then I was like, oh yeah, you know, like my dad's friends come over and, you know, like they record. And it was just like, oh, super weird to them. And I think that's when I realized like, oh yeah, this isn't normal. This is not like a thing everybody does. And I think that's when I realized, oh, this is kind of interesting and cool and special. And, you know, I think it was the best thing for me to grow up in it because I really learned like how to be in the studio and like be cool and not like, you know, kind of know how to know your audience and kind of read a room, you know, a little bit of like when to shut up, when to tell a joke. And, you know, everybody will tell you like in touring, half of the battle's the hang. Like if you're like a weirdo, it's like, nobody wants to hang out or not a lot of people are going to want to have you back on the road, I guess you could say, you know, so it was really cool. And it was interesting. And, you know, I love music obviously, but growing up in that whole thing, you know, everybody's parents would play records. Some people would, some people wouldn't, I guess, but like that was one thing, but it was a different thing to see records being made and be a part of that process sometimes. And then, you know, the live aspect, you know, my dad would go play shows. He put on shows with, you know, different musicians from like all walks. And that was really interesting. So I saw how the money worked. I saw like, you know, buying gear like from an early age and like just kind of being thrown into it. And like, you know, now it's just such a fluid thing. Like I don't really, you know, it just benefited me a lot. You know, I feel like I got a head start on that stuff too, just kind of coming up in it, which is great.
Yeah, it kind of is like second nature to you, huh?
Yeah.
Did you ever wander off into the like a normal 9-to-5? Or I mean, did you ever hold any like, you know, side gigs and stuff? Yeah. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I had a lot of weird shit. Can I say shit or is that like a whole thing? Okay, sorry. But yeah, you know, I had a bunch of stuff I was doing. Like when I was in high school, I was starting my drum company and trying to fund it. Do all that. So I was playing a lot of gigs, but then I was like teching, being like a roadie, doing stuff like that for local bands and like hustling my stuff. But I would move like Lowe's and Home Depot, any of that kind of stuff. Yeah, I played football, I was like a bigger dude. So like I'd move like pallets in the warehouse sometimes on the weekends if they had shifts. I sold signs door to door at Signorama, which sucked. I hated that job. If you live in Southern California and you've driven by dry cleaners, chances are they probably yelled at me to get out of their store because they didn't want to buy my signs. So that was definitely tough. I delivered blueprints for like a Reaper graphics company and like architects. Like it just, anything I could do to make some dough, I was doing it. I didn't really, you know, I wasn't scared of it. And then I worked at the Almighty Guitar Center for a year, which was actually really fun. I really enjoyed it. Like, you know, I was good at selling drums and, you know, kind of hanging out. And as most people did, I did it for the discount on gear I wanted. So it was actually pretty cool. So yeah, it was great. I mean, so I had a host of different jobs, but I can actually say since I was 18 and graduated high school, I haven't had a different job other than like running my drum company and touring. And I started touring a production company 5-6 years ago. So it's been kind of full speed from that ever since. So yeah, it's been a long road.
That's so cool. So you are at Guitar Center and you're selling the drums. Was that before or after you decided you were going to sell your own?
I was doing it at the same time, but it was frowned upon. Like, I couldn't hustle my brand of drums, and we weren't that far along yet. So, but people kind of were getting hip to it at that point. And I remember I got fired because of that, or fired, quote unquote, you know, had to resign because I wasn't pushing, you know, my brand of drums, but at the same time, like, I wasn't scared to talk about it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't care. Like, if you're going to ask, I'll tell you. But and this is before Instagram and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, when you were kind of like more word of mouth, I was going to shows every night. I would sit outside the parking lot trying to talk to drummers, show them my drums in the car, like, you know, really sketchy sounding shit now. But, you know, I was that guy, you know, I was hustling pretty hard. But people used to come into the store I was working at and they'd be like, hey, you own that Master Smith. That's your stuff, right? And I was like, yeah. And then a couple of the guys that worked there weren't really too down with that. They kind of ratted me out, and the manager had a talk, like a whole talk with me. And I was like, I'm not selling my stuff. But, you know, there's a few people that, you know, kind of, you know, bummed everyone out because they're like, well, I don't want to buy one of those drums. Like, I'd rather just buy yours. And
you're like, yo, like they know who I am. They're asking, like, I'm not going to kick them out of the store because they're asking about me.
Yeah. And the other thing is too, like, they were very adamant. They're like, yeah, well, this XYZ brand of drums is cool, but I'd rather just buy one of yours. And then it's like, well, then what do you do? It's not like, sorry, man. And it used to be like, you know, you kind of give them the eye of like, you know, I'll see you in the parking lot, like 5 minutes, you know? So, and they would be like, do you have a card? Shit. Like, you know, so it just kind of came to the point where, and, you know, frankly, like I would sell, like, you know, back at Guitar Center, you'd be selling like, you know, $30,000-$40,000 a month worth of drums. And I'm like, well, I kind of want to sell that much worth of mine. That'd be cool. And at that time we had a little bit of a footing. I had some cool bands playing stuff. So, you know, I think it was kind of time. It was like to the point where it's like, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, but, you know, I definitely think I'm capable of it. And shit doesn't work out. Again, I was touring. I was making some money as a drum tech and being a TM. So it's like, I'll just go do that and I'll just fund that, you know. So I was just like, cool. That's what I'm doing. And that was it. I've never, you know, been very lucky to where I haven't, you know, gone back to like a 9-to-5. I mean, if I had to, you know, especially with the times we're living in now with the pandemic, I'd be fine doing it just to survive. But yeah, it's been pretty much music ever since in a lot of different capacities, you know?
Yeah, I definitely love the, just like the tenacity of, like, you know, figuring out that you care about something and then just like going for it. And I kind of was in a similar situation at my high school. So my students, I don't know, they're all teenagers, and like my boyfriend, so this hat that I'm wearing is a Prism hat, and my boyfriend started this clothing brand, it's streetwear. And so I was just kind of like nonchalantly telling him about it and stuff. And then I was like, well, you know, like I could bring you one, you have to pay for shipping. And so I sold a good amount, and I was selling them to like the seniors and stuff. And so people were, sure, like asking about it and whatever, but yeah. A teacher ratted me out.
Always. What is that shit? Sucks.
Yeah, dude, I got ratted out. And then I had the union contact me, and then like my principal. And what? They're like, yeah, like I had what was it? It was like it was just like a review, like follow-up on like an observation or whatever. And he's like, oh yeah, I also have to ask, have you been selling shirts? And I was like, no, I mean, I was just delivering them, not anymore, you know.
Yeah. Do I need to not be selling shirts? Like, oh man.
Right. I'm like, well, nobody said I couldn't. It's better to apologize, yeah, for doing it later than to ask, yeah, permission, right?
Totally.
So is that something that, what do you think about that? The whole, you know, just going forward and apologizing later.
You know, I, yeah, same thing. I kind of just had to do it. I didn't, you know, like a story that's kind of been out for a minute. And like a lot of people that grew up in, like, you know, I grew up in Mission Viejo, so like South Orange County, but I used to sneak in. My friend Mo, who works for, I think he works for 21 Pilots now. Mo and his brother Mehdi are like these dope security guys. But Mo was a stage manager at the House of Blues in Anaheim. And we're friends till this day. We met because I used to sneak in the side door and go straight to the drum riser and like literally take a snare drum, force it on the drummer or the drum tech, be like, hey, check it out. Half the time they thought I like worked there or like it was just some weirdo. And the other half, they were just like, get this guy away from me. But Mo like literally was like, dude, you can't do that shit. Like he kind of figured out what I was doing. But we stayed friends ever since. And after a while, he was like, cool, like, you know, I'll get you and just like, don't be weird. Like, it'll be great, you know? So, and that was kind of the deal. And so bless him for it, but he was super cool about it. But yeah, that was the thing. You kind of just, I think in this business too, and just anybody that's ever done a festival or, you know, even flying with gear, like you, there are no rules. Like you got to just kind of charm your way through it or just bulldoze your way through it. And, you know, there's always going to be the guy saying, you can't park here. And it's like, well, I'm not just parking here, tow it. I don't know what to tell you. I got to do this shit. Or, you know, if you look at touring and doing gigs, like half the stuff doesn't fit anywhere where it needs to go, but you just kind of make it work, you know, and you just try and finesse it the best you can, I guess. But yeah, it's a lot of apologizing later, I guess, and just being, and sometimes if you do a pretty good job, it's like you don't even have to apologize. I'm like, okay, that was great. And you're just like, oh yeah, I totally knew that. So you just kind of go with it the best you can.
Yeah, it's just like a roll the dice.
Yeah, pretty much. You have to.
Yeah.
After a while.
That's so cool. So what about in, you know, in like your home life? I know you have a business life, you have your touring life, and then you have, you know, your personal home life. So how does that, you know, exercising of your charm help with your personal life or hurt it? Because sometimes you can't bullshit a bullshitter. So I don't know.
Yeah, you know, definitely. I mean, you know, my mom will tell you she's got the bullshit meter on an all-time high with me sometimes, you know. Or my mom's really good at punking me and bringing me back down to earth. She's like, listen, you may be the guy out there, but go take out the trash, you know, just get. You know, I think with like home life and personal life, it's a little bit of just, you know, obviously you're trying to balance everything you can. Sometimes you do it better than other times, I guess, you know. So it's been a little, it gets trickier as you get busier, as you get older. Obviously, you know, it's like you have kids or depending on what kind of life you want, it's definitely, it can get a little hairy at times. But I think, again, you know, when I was younger, like in my 20s, I was just like, I'm just going to work till I'm dead kind of thing. And I would work till 4 or 5 in the morning. And, you know, now that I'm in my early 30s, which is fine, I'm much more mature, I guess. But no, you know, I still work like crazy hours. And so that kind of shuffles around like your relationships, like your friends, your family. And, you know, it's a big sacrifice too, you know, to put a lot of this stuff on. And this isn't to downplay anybody else's position in, you know, the team. But it's like, you know, backline guys don't really come in till later in the picture, you know, audio, all that stuff. But, you know, like being the one running it, it's very time consuming. And especially now with tour directing and like doing it on a larger scale, like you have multiple clients, you have all that kind of stuff. So it is very, you know, tough to kind of keep all the stuff together. But I think the main thing I've been doing now is I take really good notes. And I just have a crazy, like, you know, iPhone calendar of like birthdays, and you just try and like keep up with people. But I've really realized through, you know, COVID and the pandemic, you know, like take better care of myself and like relationships and all that kind of stuff, because, you know, it's really important. And, you know, when you don't have work, you kind of realize like, what, you know, what else do you do? You know, so granted, I've got another business role, which is good, but you know, even with that, it's kind of like you can have a little bit more time to, excuse me, focus on different things. And, you know, I think kind of nurture like your friendships and your relationships and stuff that kind of took a hit, you know. And I think with me, especially now, you know, I'm just checking in on like friends that are, you know, crew guys and vendors and all that stuff, because everybody's a little down here and there. So I think it's nice to be supportive of everybody and just really try and, you know, see whatever you can do for each other. And sometimes a phone call is just great, you know, or a text or whatever you can. So, you know, the balance is, I think that's something I feel like me personally, I'm always going to be working on, because it's just, I know once I have, like, I'm very intense when I work, I have a lot of fun, but I kind of have like seek and destroy tunnel vision of like, we have to get this done, you know, or I get really fixated on projects to just try and make them happen. So, you know, sometimes things, you know, don't get as much attention. So I'm trying to water the plants, so to say.
So what effect does that tunnel vision have on different aspects of your life?
You know, I think I have a hard time relating to like my friends, like my old friends, you know, like high school friends, all that kind of stuff. And even like, you know, friends you made later in life, like, I don't think they kind of understand my stuff sometimes because I just get so focused with it and it just kind of turns into like a very consuming thing. So I think understanding from other people is a little difficult at times. And again, it's not to say that what I do isn't more important than anybody else's stuff. Like, it's actually kind of the contrary. Like, I literally think anybody that's really passionate about what they're doing, that is really interesting to me. Like, I don't, you know, some people don't really even know half the stuff I do just because, you know, A, it's like work and I don't really care. Like, I mean, I don't need to be that guy. Well, today, you know, it's like Ringo Starr came over. That hasn't happened. That'd be dope though. Call me. But, you know, I just think that, you know, a lot of things go on pause for a bit, you know, whether it's like, you know, just even working out or stuff like that. So I think a lot of things kind of suffer a little bit in their own weird ways. But, you know, again, you just try and pick up with them wherever you can. And sometimes as people, unfortunately, but, you know, I think relating to other people, it's a little bit harder sometimes because, you know, you just live in this weird bubble of like doing stuff and, you know, running around all the time. And, you know, just like simple things too. It's like my friends are sometimes like, man, we're trying to book this trip. And I'm like, cool, when are you going? They're like, oh, you know, August next year. I'm just like, okay, cool. Like,
you're like, I don't know what I'm going to be doing in August.
Yeah. I'm like, I will literally get on a plane right now. I'll book it on like my way to the airport kind of thing. So it's just even like little things like that, like booking hotels and flights to me, just like a lot of people listening, is like the most second nature thing we can do. But for some people, you realize like, oh, they don't live like that, or hotels are weird to them. And I'm just like, oh, okay. So sometimes you kind of, like for me too, it's like, I just kind of have to snap out of it. I'm like, oh yeah, that's not how everybody like lives, you know, or they don't want to live that way. And that's cool too. You know, it's totally different.
Yeah, that's funny. So what are some things that you figured out that you should do when you run into situations that you are getting really ultra focused on something and you notice that you're letting things slip? What do you do to get back?
You know, I've been, it sounds really dumb, but like when I was starting to like really get hardcore into production managing and like in the arena setting, it's like, you know, Groundhog Day, concrete dome kind of thing. I would not go outside. I would go in at 6 a.m. or 5:30 in the morning and I'd be the last one out, like hold the buses at 2 a.m. for me kind of thing. I would jump on the bus because I was just doing work and advancing or whatever. And, you know, I would make a point to like, you know, call friends or, you know, whatever. And it was like, that would be like my thing. So now I make it a point to like, you know, tell everybody too, like if you have a girlfriend, wife, whatever, and you're in a relationship, go on a walk. Like, so I've been doing my own thing. Like I'll go on a walk. I'll call, like, I have a goal. Like I try and call like a friend or two a day, you know, or family or whatever, just call a couple people. Cause like, I still like the phone. Like, I mean, texting is fine, but I just like saying hey to people and like talking shit with friends or whatever. So I just really make it a point to like get out of the arena or the show like for a half hour a day. And even when I'm at the office too at home, like try and take walks, just catch up with people. And so I feel like that kind of normalizes me a little bit. I do like to just try and do something physical because I realize I used to work out all the time, but this job kind of chains you to the desk a little bit or the floor, you know, like you kind of have to be around because you're the one getting radio calls all day. So I do try and do something physical, even though now it's kind of goofy. If like, you know, I'm just like, I have these little Bowflex weights in like my production cases where I'll just like do something and people are walking in like, hey, what about this? You know, oh, hold on. You know, so I think I'll just kind of do that because that helps break up my brain a little bit. And also, I just like draw, you know, I draw whatever, you know, whether it be like really dumb stuff, stick figure portraits of people. Just stuff like that. And I will literally play with Legos at least 10 minutes a day. That's like my thing. I've been doing that for a long time. So I have a little box of Legos in my production case too that I like to just mess around with. It breaks up my brain. I just, you know, when you're so focused on something, and I deal with a lot of people's money and all that stuff, like doing something really stupid like that just makes me super happy. And you're like, oh, okay. Like life is normal. So I'll try and do that a bunch. I mean, I don't really like watch a ton of TV or anything like that just because I don't really have time to. I mean, with quarantine, it's been dope because I've been just Huluing like nobody's
Huluing.
Great. Yeah. Huluing, however you want to say it. Yeah. So that's been really cool to kind of catch up on that.
I'm curious, what do you think it is about Legos and the actual activity that you're doing, like the function of it, that is different from maybe watching Hulu that is helpful?
Yeah. You know, I think it's just, I love building things, you know, whether it be like drums or like, you know, obviously on a bigger level, like a stage, that's cool, but I'm not physically building stuff. I think the Lego thing is, it may be like a control thing or something like that, but it's also like, there's just something really fun and satisfying about it. Like, you know, I don't have like a kit of like a certain one I'd be building. Like when I was a kid, I used to love building Legos and, you know, following all the instructions and stuff, but I think there's something about it, just like holding those pieces and snapping them all together and just building the dumbest thing you could think of, you know, and like sometimes I'll make people come in and be like, hey, is that a dragon? I'm like, no, it looks terrible. And you're just like, well, whatever. It was worth a try. You know, half the time it's just a mess with people too. But, you know, like I'll just, I don't know. I think there's something really satisfying about it and just like working with your hands a little bit and just messing around. And again, Legos are something that bring me back to being a kid, and it's just always really fun. And I think it kind of puts me in a good mood too. Like, you know, I'm always pretty like, I'm the happiest idiot you'll meet on the road sometimes. But it, like, if something's kind of stressful, I like building something out of Legos real quick because it'll just kind of like snap me back a little bit of like, oh yeah, you'll be fine. You can just deal with this stuff too, you know?
Yeah, like it's comforting for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. What are some other things that you find comforting?
You mean like on the road or just in general?
Yeah, just in general when you're like, you know, because, okay, let's be real specific. So sure. When I'm looking for comfort, I want a bottle of Cab and a lot of chocolate.
Okay. Sure. Okay. Well, that's now, good.
Is that necessarily the best thing to do? No. So,
yes,
you know,
absolutely. What are you talking about? Yeah.
But okay. So, But you know, I find it interesting that it's something from your childhood that you're bringing back. That's actually a healthy thing to do, I think. And like, I don't know, I think that's really cool. So I'm wondering, are there any other things? Have you ever thought about it? Like, are there other things that I rely on when I need a little bit of comfort?
Yeah. You know, and it's actually interesting you bring that up because it was a long time running for years and it's so bad for you. And I've just kicked it the last month during quarantine or this whole COVID fun time we're living in. I was hardcore. I would drink Diet Coke like nobody's business. Like we're not even talking like a normal amount. Like it was like, my writer for the production office was like, 12 pack of Diet Coke, and like I probably rip half of it a day, and it was like no problem. Like, and anybody that's toured with me know, like I drink drinks really fast, and I eat really fast because I don't have that much time to sit down on the road. And I've just been that way since I was a kid too, like maybe just rush eating. I don't know why. And my mom always used to be like, "You need to slow down." So I'm like, I'm trying to do that too. Like, we go to a nice dinner, sure, but like I'm just a dude. I'll run and grab a sandwich and just slam a DC and it's just not even a thing. But I've actually stopped drinking them full on for a month and I feel great and I'm like, okay, this is like a good thing. But my thing for a long time was Diet Coke and Duds, milk Duds on the road. That was like my thing. I do have
such an interesting combination.
Yeah, it's so dumb. It's like, welcome to hang out with a five-year-old. Like, I'm very accomplished, but I play with Legos, I eat milk Duds, I drink Diet Coke. So what's up?
I'm just like astonished by the fact that it's like 12 Diet Cokes, but then I just told you like I literally drink the whole bottle. So
yeah, it's fine. You have every right to, you know, don't be jealous.
I know. It is what it is. Move on, right?
Yeah, no. And if it was like a thing, but now of like you know, and even when I was trying to wean off the DC or like the Diet Coke, like I would do LaCroix all the time, but it's just still not the same, you know, but it's good now. But yeah, I think sometimes it would be like, you know, I wouldn't eat all day. And it's, again, I'm trying to like get better with healthy habits, but like I'd eat just like, you know, sandwich or like a heavy boy at night and just pass out, you know. But it's like you get older, like you cannot be doing that. It's just really bad for you. So it's good. But yeah, I definitely think like things that are like comforting are like a good meal. Like I love to cook. I love to, you know, eat good food too now. It's like I think like a good meal with like, especially, you know, if you're lucky to have it with your family and friends or significant other and all that kind of stuff, like that is like the best kind of thing. And you know, again, cooking too, not just going out, but like cooking is a super comforting thing. And that's why like sometimes if you get lucky on the road, you know, you stay at those places that have like kitchenettes or something in there. You know, I got lucky to know some people that own restaurants, so like sometimes they let me come and I'd just be like on the grill cooking and we'd like make a meal with each other. So like that was really cool. So yeah, I think definitely food is like a big comforting thing. Like I don't drink coffee, but I know like coffee for a lot of people is like their jam in the morning. And I like, I love it. I back it. I love the way it smells, but I'm pretty high energy all the time. And if I drank coffee, it'd be like me smoking meth. And that would just not be a good scene, right? I'd be like cleaning the buses.
Just like, and you'd probably you know? Be like in a bad mood at the same time.
Yeah, that would be great. So watch out, dude. You never know.
I love it. Yeah, I mean, definitely food is just, it is. It has so many functions, you know, and it can really turn your day around too. Like I've, it's just even like having to worry about what to eat and things like that can be really stressful. So you guys, when you're on the road, you kind of, you know, you have catering in most places, like everything's kind of set. Do you go fun places? Like, do you make it a point to go find a place to eat when you have time? Cause I know you said you're basically.
Yeah. You know, the fun part about like having a hand in the way, like we spend some days off and all that stuff is that, you know, obviously just schedule permitting and, you know, trucks and buses and all that stuff. But I like to try and plan days off in really good food spots. I know it's kind of dumb, but like I was working with a comedian, you know, Gabriel, you know, Fluffy Iglesias, and he's the best. But that was the last tour I did before quarantine. But we had a few days off, like, you know, comedy, like he was doing arenas and all that stuff. But we got lucky because there was a few times where we'd have 2 days off in a row, which kind of unheard of sometimes. But, you know, so it was like, cool, we could either go to the next city, we break up the drive and we go to Chicago for like a day and a half, and then we jump on the bus and go to like Milwaukee or something like that. So we do that and we just like eat through the town basically. So I always am kind of like trying to be shifty with that stuff and just basically like, what's the fattest place we can go to and hang out and eat and then get on the bus and go to the next gig? So that's been kind of like my big MO. And, you know, I always try to do like, you know, band crew dinners and all that kind of stuff. A lot of the bands I tour with, like, a friend of mine and, you know, one of our clients, Eli from Walk the Moon, and Walk the Moon in general, those guys are like little foodies too. So we'll all just find weird restaurants. And, you know, I'm a sucker for a speakeasy bar. It's got to be like weird and kind of off the grid. So
I used to work at a speakeasy.
There you go. So you know what it's all about. I mean, that's kind of like my thing, just finding like really fun places to eat or like really weird bars to go to. And, you know, the stranger, the better kind of thing. So I'm all about that. I really love it. I think everybody that tours, like the food scene's kind of like what it's all about. You know, you find your little spots and your little haunts and all that stuff. And yeah, you know, like sometimes we're lucky enough to have catering, which is great. But, you know, sometimes it's kind of nice to just be like, well, what are you going to go find, you know, in like smaller cities or smaller venues? They're like in town, you know? So it's definitely fun. Like, shed tours and all that stuff kind of suck because you wake up in the middle of nowhere and you're like, oh, hopefully catering's good today. So we'll see what we get.
Yeah, being dropped in the middle of a city is definitely more fun, I think, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. If you get lucky enough to do it, it's the best. I mean, that's when I'm always just kind of like, oh, man, this sucks. I'm like sitting here. All my friends are out having fun. But, you know, at the same time, that's what it's all about. You want everybody to go out there and be in a good mood, because when everybody's got like high energy and like stoked and got to eat at their favorite place, like just brings morale up, you know? Like I love seeing that. And I just love tour people, I should say. It's like, because everybody just comes in like, oh, I have the best meal. And then it's always like, you know, one girl's like, no, I had a way better meal. It's like my favorite thing. It's so dumb, but it's like the best thing to like argue about. It's like, no, dude, my burrito ruined your pizza. And it's like, wow, we're the fattest bunch of people on the road. It's great. But then that's like everybody.
And you got one meal today, so.
Yep. Pretty much.
You'll never get to experience the burrito I just had.
Yeah, pretty much.
Until you come back.
Yeah, it's the only thing that matters. It's great.
So. Oh, that's so fun. So what are some other things that you think are good for morale and things on tour?
You know, I think that's the biggest thing. You know, I've been lucky enough to learn from a lot of guys when I started getting on bigger tours, like some people that were running the ship, so to speak, were like all about like the band and crew having a good time and mixing and doing like stuff. They planned things. And then, you know, sometimes it was like, nope, it's all business. Like it's all about the band, or the tour manager was like, you guys are kind of on your own. Just be stoked to be here kind of thing. And it goes both ways. You know, granted, you're out there to do a job and you got to keep it professional. But I really think the more fun everyone has, the better your shit's going to be. And everybody always argues about that. Like, well, there needs to be a big separation between band and crew. And, you know, some guys are very all about like, they need to hold all the cards and like the only ones that can interface with the band. Whereas, you know, you have to establish like a certain hierarchy and respect, obviously, of like, hey, I'm going to handle the money. I'm going to go big picture decisions and all that stuff. But for the most part, like, I have a pretty solid, like, gang mentality. I'm like, if we're all out here, we all need to go have fun. We all need to do things. Because some people forget, too. Sometimes the band is like, or the artist you're working for is like, kind of waiting for the invite. And they almost don't know, like, well, do I hang out? Like, or do I, you know, like, and this is an all, you know, I've had super famous dudes and like not so famous dudes, and they're all in the same boat. Like, remember one time, I'll leave her nameless. She was like, I'm just sitting in the hotel room and you guys are having all this fun. What is this shit? You know, I'm like, oh, come hang. And that's when I realized like, oh, it doesn't need to be that way. Cause I knew from my standpoint of like being a backline guy in the beginning and like just kind of coming up, like I was always kind of bros with the band. You know, I didn't really think anything of it. And then, you know, politics come to play, the bands get bigger, there's more management and this, that, and the other. But I also think like, I also thought when I was the one to be in charge, I was going to make it like a whole gang and just like everybody would have fun. We'd do stuff together. Granted, sometimes the band's really busy. Sometimes the crew's really busy, but I always make it a point to like do something stupid every week. If it's like a bigger tour or, you know, if we're out for a few weeks, like schedule stuff in. So like I'm notorious for like, I'll call the humane societies in town and get puppies. So we'll just do like a puppy petting day. And that's like the best.
That's because, so precious.
Oh, it's the best. I mean, come on. We don't deserve dogs, but we should play with them for sure. I mean, and it's like the best. It's the most fun because like the saltiest dudes on the crew will just be like rolling on the floor with these dogs. And you're like, it's oh my God, you are human. Yeah, it's great. So stuff like that. I've had like, I have a friend who owns an ice cream company, so I would hit her up and be like, hey, can you bring an ice cream truck down? And like, we'll do that. You know, like, and a lot of it too is like, you have to be in that mindset of like, you have to be thinking about what we've been doing. You know, I think that's a big part. Like, my job's exhausting sometimes, but you do those things because it's going to be worth it when you see it on everyone's faces. You know, like, I'm all about the surprise and like gift giving and all that stuff. Like, that's a little bit of my love language with that, you know? So I love seeing people's reactions like, oh no, you did not. There's dogs everywhere, or, you know, doing stuff like that. But that's a big part of it. So like, even with my production coordinators, I'll always be like, hey, you need to like, when we sit down for a tour initially, I'm like, look, these are going to be long days. These are the things that are circled. Make sure we're eating different stuff. That's cool and exciting. Like, you know, okay, if we have a late load out and an early load in back to back, get a barista station, like, you know, people love coffee, but they shouldn't have to make it that day. Like, we got to try and do stuff like that. So I think that's just a little bit of like caring a bit more, you know, like, I think that's a big thing of, you know, the whole gig essentially, because everybody's out there, we're all people, like everybody wants stuff. And, you know, granted, it's like, yeah, sure, you could say, well, you should just be happy to be out here and you're getting paid. But, you know, if the energy is good, you know, your band and your artist can sense that, you know, if like it's very tense and people are unhappy, the show suffers. You know, I genuinely believe that people don't want to mix as well. Like, just they don't give a shit. You know, it's just like, well, they don't care about me. Why should I care that much? But that's the thing. When you do those little things, it adds up. And then, you know, like other stupid stuff. Like, I buy Nerf guns and we like just destroy each other on the road. Like, stuff like that. You know, you should have like, you know, there's always a little bit of a slush fund to like buy stupid stuff and like have a good time with him. Buy stupid stuff too. It's like, you know, we'll get some yoga mats. We'll do all that stuff. Sometimes we'll bring in like a yoga teacher to do stuff with the crew and the band. So just all about, you know, just those little things. But also I think you have to build it in. Like, you just make it a part of your job to keep the energy high, or else it's just going to be the most dragged out Groundhog Day you've never wanted to be a part of, you know? So I think it's really important to do that.
It's definitely harder to get people out of a funk than it is to just keep them, you know, on a good frequency. So
yeah, if you're always stoked, you never have to get unstoked.
Exactly. So, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's definitely nice to talk to people who find it really important to kind of take care of the person and like the humans that are on tour. And because it's really easy to feel isolated, and it's really easy to just feel like a number, because, you know, a number of things could happen at any point and it could be your last day on the tour. So,
yeah,
you know, so it's like, in order for people to really feel appreciated, like, you almost do have to go a little bit out of your way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think in this, you really have to, because you have so many personalities, you have so many uncomfortable situations you're in. And granted, you try and make it the nicest you can, or at least, you know, I pride myself on doing that. I know a lot of other great people in the industry do as well. You know, the hotels you stay at, you know, try to get nicer buses and all that stuff. Like, you really work hard on that, because those things matter, you know, making sure people have what they want on the buses, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, you don't want to have touring's kind of uncomfortable. You know, and as you get older, you realize that real fast. Like, you know, the 8 days straight of like, you know, an hour of sleep on a really rock hard thing, you're just like, oh, this sucks. So yeah, you really do have to try and make the effort to like make it nice for everybody. And the other thing is too, is that I'm the person that calls everybody for the work. So the people you have around you, once you get your squad together, you want them to like keep doing stuff with you, you know? So you set a certain standard where they know, like, I know a lot of guys that literally will just be like, cool, like, you just great, I'll be available for those days. They don't ask about, they know I'll sort them out with their money. They'll know I'll get their flights handled. I have all their paperwork, but they just like, yeah, wherever you're going, I'm going, you know? And that's a big thing. You know, that means a lot too, that people will literally follow you to wherever you're going because they know you're going to sort it out. But that also puts the pressure on you to be like, hey, you have to deliver. Like, you know, they're not going to roll in. They know with me, they're not going to roll in. And it's like, oh God, where are we going to get food? Like, it's all sorted out. You know, it's like, so they can go do their job too, because the better they can do their job and the quicker they can do their job, like, you know, we all win. So that's kind of it's a really big thing. So yeah, you have to go out of your way to make this thing really nice and work for everybody, you know, and you can do it on any budget. You just have to care.
Yeah, it really is about caring and just being empathetic of other people's experiences, I think. You really made me think of kind of the way that a coach would approach, you know, their team. You know, it's like, it's like you're not a dictator. You're not just there to like get X, Y, and Z done. Like, you're actually there to encourage them and like make sure that they still, they have what they need and they're able to really put their best foot forward.
Yeah, I mean, because I want to party too. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I'm also out there doing it myself. And even the tours, like, I have to remotely, you know, tour director, production manager, you know, have boots on the ground kind of people. I still want it to be good, because like, if I was doing it, I would want to have it this way, you know? So like, I'm pretty like a team player, you know, with that kind of stuff. Like, I want to stay at nicer places too and hang out and, you know, go get good food, and they should get that too. It shouldn't just be 2-3 people at the top, you know?
Hell yeah. It's a very socialist mindset you have. No.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to get crucified for saying all the old guys are like, what the fuck? You're ruining it for all of us.
Oh, man.
I don't care. That's how
the pyramid tumbles. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, this is the best pyramid scheme ever.
Right. Oh, man. So tell me, I'm curious, because right now we've all been kind of thrusted into this space where we've had a lot of time to think, to sit with ourselves and really just consider what the hell we've been doing with our lives. So is there anything that you've discovered about yourself that you didn't know about before?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm okay. Yeah, a lot of things probably. But the thing that comes to mind first off is that I think the last 5 or 6 years, I've been moving pretty nonstop. Multiple bands, just, you know, drum company, touring, like anything you could think of, I was doing it. And it was great. It's really exciting. I like the adventure of it. I love airports. I love it all. Like, I'm all about that shit. But I think the biggest thing I realized, like maybe a couple weeks in, is that I'm okay sitting still, you know, and I can kind of regroup and, you know, take the time to be a little bit better, you know, for myself. Obviously, like relationships, family, all that kind of stuff. Those are the things that you realize are really important to you, and who, you know, who matters, you know, who do you matter to as well, you know? And I'm really proud to say, like, you know, I was able to, like, you know, round up all the people I tour with and friends and just keep connected, which was really good. But it really comes back to, like, I was okay being at home. For a minute, I was like, I don't really know how this feels. But then you're like, no, this is not too bad. This is great, you know. So it was nice to sit still for a minute and also kind of process, like, what the hell happened to you the last few years, you know? Like, where have you even been? And my favorite thing was I started going through old hard drives, pictures, and then scrolling to the beginning of my phone. I was like, oh my God, it's, try it if you're out there. Like, if you have, if you're a touring person or just anybody who takes a lot of pictures and doesn't dump them off their phone, even like 30, 40,000 pics, like, go through them, it'll blow your mind. And it's like reconnecting dots, you know? So that was really cool. I have like some weird hobbies that I like. I love typewriters. People that have toured with me know I have a gold typewriter in my production case that I bought as a birthday present to myself a couple years ago. And I like love typing letters to people and just saying, hey, and like little notes or whatever I can. So I go and just find really beat up typewriters. And, you know, I have a drum shop that has a metal shop too. So I can make some extra parts for them. Like, I love to learn how they work and I'll put them together. And sometimes I'll give them to like people as gifts. So like, I like doing that, but
oh, yeah, it's been so fun. Let's talk about typewriters really fast. So it actually reminded me of, and since we're talking about also comforting things when you're little, I remember when I was little, my grandma used to take me to school because she was a teacher, and I would play on the typewriters in the elementary school. So, or not in the high school, but I remember going to like, it was like an estate sale or something. And I did find some typewriters. They're really cool. And I think that they were the ones with like little metal where they're like sticking out. What is it about typewriters that you love?
I think like everybody, you're always on your phone and you can write an email in 2 seconds. And I write tons of emails. I read a lot of emails, but you know, like with, I'm guilty of it too. Like I'll be running down the hall with typing something. I don't think about spelling. I don't maybe think about what I'm saying sometimes because I need to get somebody an answer or I need to check in or whatever. And that's fine. But that's almost like just getting through it. I think like with a typewriter, especially having it on the road, which is of course a luxury, I'll take it out sometimes after the gig's done and I'll, you know, everybody's sorted out and I maybe have like maybe an hour for myself. And I like sitting there and like putting the paper in, like, you know, turning the platen and like bringing it all in and starting to type. But it makes me slow down a lot. Like you have to be like mindful of what you're saying and typing and it has to make sense. And you can't really screw it up because you'll have to start all over again, you know? So I almost think it makes me like focus on like what I'm saying and who I'm trying to write something to. And I, you know, I'm a drummer, you know, before anything. So I love like the rhythm of it and like the way it sounds. And it's like very satisfying. Yeah. It's very satisfying to like hit the key and the thing comes up and it's like, oh wow, you know, you made that. So it's cool. And I fucking hate chargers, all the shit, all the wires, all the wireless stuff. It's kind of dope to just bring something out and be like, it's going to work. You know, like I don't, oh, my worst nightmare is like, you know, when you get settled into your bunk and you have your iPad and you're like, oh, I'm gonna watch this. I can't wait. And your iPad's dead and your charger's in your backpack and the junk bug. And I'm like, I fucking hate it. Just like, I'm done. Bye forever.
You're like, time for Legos.
Yeah, I hate this. It's like, guess I'll sleep now. You know, so I don't know. There's just something about that. I just really like, it's just, you don't have to worry about it. And you just, you know, just go for it. It's really fun. And when people get like typed letters, like there's just something like really nostalgic. And it's like, you know, you can write somebody an email all day. And sometimes you might have to, but it's really nice like getting a piece of mail. Or, you know, sometimes I'll like slip people notes in their box, like, hey, I love you, but please shower. You know, it's just like stupid shit like that, you know. But, you know, got a couple stinkers on the cruise, no big deal. But, you know, it's just fun like that. I really do enjoy that. Sometimes before tours, I'll type everybody a little like note or send them like a little something, whether it be a t-shirt or like some booze or something like that, or whatever we're doing for the tour. And like, they'll get it before we take off. And like, that's always a fun thing because the reactions are always cool. You know, it's nice. I really like doing that. I've been doing it a lot during COVID and quarantine and the whole pandemic. Like, I just send out letters all the time to all the crew guys and crew gals and everything. And it's really fun because I'll just be like, oh man, that thing made the fridge. So it'll be really cool like that.
I love it. It's like you find ways to, and this is kind of what I'm gathering from a lot of the stories that you're telling me, is that you kind of, because your life is so fast paced and it's really easy to just get really focused and then let small moments pass you by, you almost force yourself to stop by doing things that are, you know, where you can use your hands and where you have to think about it a little bit, and you know, where you're physically slowing down.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing about me. You know, I say it all the time, like, my drum company obviously is where I started this whole journey of mine, and it opened a lot of doors for me, and it was always something I had going on, which was great. So it filled time. But eventually when it scaled up and touring got busier and my clients got bigger and I became more integral to the whole operation, I tell people all the time, some people that know me the best know that the only time I feel normal is when I am in the shop building drums. Like, sometimes, like, if you could just take away everything else, like if I was just in a little shack, like, you know, bending some wood and making instruments, I'd be like, you know, all about it. You know, and luckily I get to do a little bit of that as well. But, you know, you have employees, you have people that help you pull all this stuff off because, you know, you're scaling a little bit. But I feel most normal when I'm like doing stuff like that. Like if I'm designing something or tinkering or building stuff, and, you know, even like on the road, like fixing road cases, sometimes it's kind of fun. It's like, oh yeah, I get this. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's definitely a big part of who I am, but I think, you know, I'm just a guy who likes to build things, you know, whatever it may be. I just like doing that, but I think it's really important to slow down too. You know, I feel like that's a part of growth and growing up too, of like, oh, you know, it's not, doesn't have to be that fast all the time. And, you know, you could take a second too. That's okay. That doesn't make you weaker or anything like that. It actually makes you better. You know, you can kind of take care of everything around you. You need to.
I love that so much. So one last thing, since we're almost out of time. So back at when we first started talking, I mentioned that I saw that you partnered with Music Cares and the Recording Academy. So tell me a little bit about that. And then also tell us, whoever's listening, how we can help.
Cool. Yeah. You know, that was at the beginning of COVID, and with everything happening, what we ended up doing was my drum company, we had a drum called the Trash Talk that we did a reissue of, and we changed it up slightly for the special edition. So we did 10 drums and all the proceeds went to, the Music Cares COVID-19 relief fund. And it was great. They all sold out. It was a really big success, and, you know, the money hopefully did some good, but that actually has passed. But what we're going to be doing now is I'm spearheading kind of a live performance with a short list of bands. I can't say who now, but it's, we're basically going to shoot, like, remember like old school concert DVDs, you know, that like, yeah, everybody in there. Well, now we can't do that because nobody's allowed in buildings. We're going to shoot a handful of bands kind of cinematically and theatrically, in the round with, you know, really cool camera angles, and kind of follow the start to finish of the show. So like the truck driver heading to upstage and grabbing the lighting after we're done prepping, taking it to LA, loading in, you know, kind of document what's been happening the last few months to, you know, the bands and the crew as well. And we're going to maybe do 3 to 4 episodes, and all of the proceeds for that are going to go to NEVA and Save Our Stages. So it should be really interesting. So I think we're trying to pull that off in November and just get, you know, bands and crews back together, get everybody working. But it should be a really fun project. It's very ambitious. It's very, either it's going to be really successful or everybody could just laugh at me for trying, but we're going for it. I really want to do some shows before 2020 ends. I was lucky enough to actually be on the road this year, whereas, you know, a lot of my friends didn't even get to leave the dock or the rehearsal space. So it's been really tough, I know, for a lot of people. But, you know, I was out for a couple months at the beginning of the year, and, you know, the other day I was like, man, we got to do something, you know. So it's going to be really good. There's going to be a lot of cool bands that, you know, hopefully a lot of people like. We'll be doing some fun stuff, and it should be really cool. But that is something that, you know, I'll put out on all our social pages. All the bands involved will be promoting it as well. But, you know, the one thing I can have everybody do to help is, you know, just go to saveourstages.com, get involved, write your representatives, go vote, because that's a huge thing that's going to affect us all, regardless of what your politics are. Just get involved. But the main thing is, like, get involved with NEVA and all the great organization. Music Cares, of course, like rallying to support us, you know, all the people that tour, you know, we definitely need to kind of band together. And, you know, another thing is just call your friends that are on the road. Like, you know, sometimes a call or a text is just going to make somebody's day, you know, and it's okay to do that. Even the ones that are tough, you know, everybody's feeling this thing. So just take care of yourself and each other out there. You kind of need to, you know, just people need to hear your voices more often than you think.
Beautiful. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Cy. It was so fun chatting today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. I hope we'll talk again soon.
Yeah.
All right. Absolutely. Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Cy Hanif. 1. In touring, as in life, half of the battle's the hang. 2. Sometimes you just have to take chances. Go for it and apologize later. In this business, there are no rules, and you have to charm your way or bulldoze your way through it and make it work. 3. When you find yourself getting lost in tunnel vision, make sure you take some time to get up and take a break. Go for a walk outside and call your family and friends regularly. Make it a point. And 4, also make it a point to do something stupid every week. Playing with puppies is always a great idea, but in all seriousness, you really do have to go out of your way to make people feel appreciated. And 5, it's really important to slow down. It doesn't make you weaker. It actually makes you better. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to give Cy a follow on Instagram at LA Drum Guy. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow the Tour Life on Instagram at the Tour Life podcast.